Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
All right, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. First things first, we'd like to thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. This is Alistair Cross, and I'm here with my co-host and collaborator, Tamara Thorne. How are you, Tamara?
I'm fine. We're so close to being done with our new books. I just can't stand it. Can you?
No, I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
You know how I know you can't. Oh, you're horrible. Yes.
I am. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Before we introduce tonight's guest, I'm going to turn it back to you, Tamara, and I'm going to let you tell the listeners a little bit about what we're working on together.
That's right. That's a lot more fun than our solos. Anyway, it's Ravencrest Exorcism in a remote part of California, Ravencrest Manor, supported there. I can't read through my cursor. Imported stone by stone from England more than two centuries ago. It's that kind of day. It's raining in California. We don't know what to do about it. Anyway, it's imported from England stone by stone more than two centuries ago. It looms tall and terrifying, gathering its dark and unnatural powers and drawing those it wants as its own. In Exorcism, Book 3 of the Ravencrest Saga, something evil stirring in the deep, dark waters of the estate's indoor pool, ghostly music plays as jazz age parties go on. I am really messing up today. It's the rain. I'm blaming the rain. Let me not try to say that on my own. Something is stirring in the deep, dark waters of the estate's indoor pool as ghostly jazz age parties fill the air with phantom music. Within the mansion, a maid is visited nightly by a demon lover, and governess Belinda Moreland is haunted by the tormented spirit of Violet LeBlanc, a silent movie star who was driven mad in her prime and wants Belinda to help her in search for her justice. The Ravencrest Saga series is first released in serialized installments. Episodes 1 through 3 are available now on Amazon, and the fourth installment will appear very soon. And I'm turning it back to you, Alistair, because the rain.
All right. Yes, and the Ravencrest Saga, there are two previous full-length books, The Ghosts of Ravencrest and The Witches of Ravencrest. They're available in ebook and Amazon. And this is the first book that we ever wrote together, so this is the this is what's responsible for us collaborating even to this day, this series. All right. But anyway, again, everyone, this is Thorn and Cross on a Nights Live. You can learn more about what we do at our websites, alistaircross.com and tamarathorn.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handle is at thorncross, or you can find us individually at tamarathorn and at crossalistair. You can also visit our Haunted Nights Live page on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at authorsontheair.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. And now for the good stuff. Tonight's guest, Marty Thornley, spent 15 years in the film industry creating screenplays and short films, and 10 years as a web developer and software architect. He returned to New England after years spent in Los Angeles, dusted off one of his screenplays, and turned it into his debut novel. Painless, the name of the novel, is sure to delight horror and medical suspense fans with its action and gore while probing into a deeper conversation about addiction and mental health. Marty Thornley is here with us tonight, and we are excited to have him. Well,
they're heralding your arrival. Sorry about that. Going back to the newsroom. Jeez. Yes, they're very excited to have you here.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's
I don't have my computer anymore,
Marty.
Alistair. Yes.
Okay, that's fine. All right, Marty, how are you? Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you guys?
Well, we're not at our best today. we've
right.
done better. but you'll outshine them all, despite us.
You will. All right. Yes. So Painless, as we told you before the show, I have not had, neither of us have had a chance to read it yet, but we both have copies of it and we're both looking forward to it. So the good news for everybody is we won't be giving away spoilers. Can you tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind this?
Sure. I got my, few minute spiel here that I give. It's interesting the way the story came about and why I ended up turning it into a novel, and then what the story is actually about are all pretty intertwined. So the original
all
concept
right.
came back to probably the early 2000s horror film industry, which I was not a fan of, with all the Saw and torture porn type genre like Hostel. So it's just I was just watching these movies with all this blood and whatever, and I just had no feelings. There's no character, there's no emotion, nothing like that, no suspense. And I tried to think about how to flip that on its head, and somehow that turned into, well, what if all these people being tortured couldn't feel any pain? And then that turned into, how would that happen? Well, a doctor would have to cure pain somehow, and it kind of just spiraled into, and then all of a sudden it clicked one day and said, well, if I'm going to do a doctor curing pain, it should be a clinical trial, right? So it kind of immediately fell together with this remote location, a bunch of characters come up, it would be an ensemble piece, the story fell together really quickly. And I actually had a roommate that moved out. I was living out in L.A. with a couple friends, and we had a three-bedroom, one of them moved out, so I had an empty room for a month, and I just locked myself in there and wrote the whole thing in a month, which I'd never done anything close to that before. It usually took me a year or two to get across something. So it just came very naturally. And at the time, I had a couple little hints of, this doctor, of course, he's a mad scientist, crazy person who's doing this completely illegitimate surgery. But in his own mind, he's thinking, oh, the pharmaceutical industry isn't going to like me because I'm going to cure pain. So there's these little notes about, over-medication and stuff like that, but very much just hinted at. So as it turns out, years later, that was the last thing I ever wrote. I tried to get it made. We had some funding that fell through a couple times, and then that was kind of my last gasp at trying to get into the film industry. About 5 years after that, I discovered that my brother had a bad problem with pain pills, and I still hadn't written anything in a long time. So unfortunately, 3 years ago, we did end up losing him to an overdose. And coming up on the year after his death, on top of going through all that, I realized I hadn't done anything really that I felt was creative in a while. I'd been doing all the web development work, and I just needed to get back into something creative. So I poured through my own screenplays and kind of totally forgot that I had mentioned some of this stuff, and that the whole topic was about, the emotional pain of these characters as being cured for their physical pain. And I knew that if I could turn it into a book, I didn't have the energy to come up with a new story from scratch, but I knew that, not that adapting a novel would be easy, but that sounded like, I could just kind of transcribe it into a book. And, the worst case for me was I'd have a book that is a finished product, right? You write a screenplay and you hope that it gets made one day. Director or producer is going to change it, all that stuff. So a book was going to be done, it was going to be finished. And there's not a whole lot of room for like character backstory in a screenplay. So I thought, well, I can make the main guy, put some hints of my brother's life in there. So I made him a construction worker who hurt his back and like stuff that was never in the screenplay, and I was able to bring some of the addiction stories back to the forefront. And that helps guide where the novel went. And even up until the very end, I didn't consider it about addiction or mental health because I still thought it was just kind of a fun mad scientist story. But the doctor has this obsession and all these other characters have these obsessions, and then the main character has this problem with pills. And by the end, I realized, wow, this really is kind of about addiction. It's all these different characters dealing with mental health and even the obsessed doctor to some extent. And the ability, do you have the ability to stop this compulsion, or you just go for the quick fix and that kind of thing? And I don't know. I don't know that everyone reads it and gets all that out of it. I still think a lot of people just go, oh, that was a fun story. So I want both audiences to get that. It didn't turn into this like intense drama. It's more, I still like people to walk away and go, oh, that was a fun, gory story. moving on.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice. So did you, I think right now, and you know, there's such an epidemic of you know, prescription mm-hmm. drug abuse, I think that it's especially relevant, and I'm mm-hmm. sorry to hear about your brother, and I'm glad that you are turning that experience into something creative that can, you know, other people can, that you can kind of share with other people. Do you feel that that's a lot of kind of what prompted this book, kind of made you want to do this?
Not at the time. Like I said, I just thought I could make this guy a construction worker and put some little details of my brother in there, and maybe it's a chance to share some good memories in the mix of all the bad stuff that was going on, you know.
Yeah.
I agree. It's such an epidemic, and you know, with my brother, that was the first time I ever heard the word fentanyl, and it might have just been around that time that was becoming more in the media, but now that's such a big word for everybody.
Right.
And you know, I just did a little local book club type event here, and as I'm going through pretty much the story I just told you guys, one person comes up to me and says, oh, I lost my sister 3 years ago. I lost my goddaughter last year. Another guy has his son going through stuff. And it's like, as soon as you mention it, everybody seems to know someone, which is scary because when you don't talk about it, no one's really talking about it. And as soon as it comes up, everyone seems to know somebody. And I think it's important to talk about, but it's also much more terrifying mm-hmm. it's when you realize how prevalent it really is.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it is. It is. So when you were writing this, so it was a screenplay first, and you turned it into a novelization, mm-hmm. and you talked about in the novel having you know, character backstory and stuff like that. Did you spend a lot of time, because there seems to be different methods of how different writers do things differently. Did you just kind of start writing it and let the characters kind of reveal their backstories to you, or did you have a certain plan that you wanted for each of them?
No, it's interesting because plot-wise, I very much need an outline. I can't sit down and just write a story. I need to know beginning, middle, and end and how they all connect and stuff like that. But with the character stuff, I did kind of let it flow and just wrote. I just started writing, and sometimes, and it was the fun stuff where, you know, you like the mysteries of writing, where you're writing and something pops up and you're like, I don't even know where that came from right now. And then as the story developed, I would look back and go, take some little details of what I had written about earlier and go, okay, how can I spiral that as they're going crazier and crazier and make that build upon each other? But I didn't necessarily have a begin to end with the character development stuff. So that was fun, where usually I'm pretty much strictly on an outline of the plot.
Yeah. So did your characters tend to take over at all, you know, and force you to do things you weren't expecting to do, or do you make your characters toe the mark?
No, I think definitely as characters come to life, they do their own thing. You know, it's hard without giving away some spoilers, but, you know, because like I said, I hinted at these things in the beginning, and then as they're spiraling, it just kind of happened, and you're like, oh, that's what that guy would do. But it just, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like you're watching a movie and you're just seeing these people do the things. It's hard to explain to someone who hasn't written, maybe, but I think that's the most interesting, fun part of it, is that you think you're in control of this thing, and sometimes you're not.
And you're not. No.
Yeah, we agree.
We like
that's our favorite. Yeah, that's our favorite thing, too. It's like you just start going, and you're like, let's see what happens, and it's amazing what does.
Yeah.
We're total
the
believers
characters
in
tell
letting
you.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're total believers in letting the characters do their own thing. But, you know, everybody has a process, and everybody does that way, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So you spent years as a programmer before this. That's such a different, you know, programming sounds so clinical and, you know, that whole left
side of the
right brain thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Did you, what brought you to the other side, the creative side?
Back to it. Yeah.
I don't know. Interestingly, they're all the same, and that's still my day job as a programmer. There is definitely a creativity to it. Basically, you know, any programmer will probably just tell you they're good at Google and problem solving, and mm-hmm. you know, you have to look at a thing and say, I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to figure it out. And, you know, I never went to school for it. I just kind of taught myself how to make my own website when I was doing the film stuff. I was like, well, I don't have any money to pay anyone, so I better figure this out. And then it turned out I was pretty good at it. So I would do one for a friend, do one for another friend. And then before I knew it, I was like, that was how I was making money.
Nice.
And I just kind of got better and better. But there is, if you've never done it, there is a creativity to it. And it's like, I like the problem solving. And that's what I liked about working in the film world too, is that you have to go out on set and figure out how to put actors together and lighting and camera and all these things and the logistics of the set. And yes, it's creative, but it's also completely logistical problem solving at the same time.
And you ended up designing your own cover, correct?
Yep.
Book cover.
I did. Yeah.
Very nice. We like
it.
Again, it's just
nice.
That problem solving thing.
I compliment you on it. It's good. I think that the covers are
Thank
one
you.
Of the most important things, and I got to tell you, it's a great cover. But anyway, didn't mean to cut you off. I just had to tell you. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I wanted minimalist, and you know, from the web stuff, in the film stuff, I know my way around Photoshop, so I found some stock art and manipulated it. And I'm not enough of a designer to like make something for you, but I can mess around until it works for me, and I don't really know.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily aiming for that. I just mess around until it looks good, and I go, okay, that I think that works for me. And, yeah.
Well, back to writing. The difference between screenwriting and book writing, there's quite a bit. There's a whole lot more showing in books. We recently had to do a screenplay of one of our books. Boy, was that an eye-opener.
Tell
us about your experience with that. Yeah.
<The world.
laughs> Yeah.
Yeah. Screenwriting is very cut and dried in some way. It's very strict formatting, strict page counts. You can't have internal dialogue. There's all these things that, you know, if you come from the novel prose writing world, just don't, like, everything you think you can do, you can't do in the screenplay. And then in a lot of ways, I like to think of it as a blueprint, right? It's this thing that everyone from the costume designer to the actor to the director to the director of photography, all these people are going to have input at some point, and it's a guide for them to make a film. And then you get on set and the actor's improv lines and stuff like that. So it's very
– yeah.
It's not a finished product at all. It's a thing that everyone references in order to make a finished product. And I can imagine if you started with a novel and turning that into a screenplay could be frustrating because you're cutting out so much stuff and not necessarily changing. It's such a different process.
Yeah.
Right.
Whereas for me, I went the other way. I went from
something. Yeah.
So I was saying for me, I went the opposite way. I went from the skin and bones screenplay to I could flesh out all the characters in between, and I found it very freeing to not worry about page count. And,
you enjoyed it.
I could
it.
Have all the internal dialogue. Yeah, it was nice.
To me, it sounds like it's harder to have to add things than to just take them out. I like overwriting and then removing the extra stuff. And so it sounds very hard to add to it. I'm like, oh, no, I thought it was done.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. What do you like best? Do you like them both equally, or did you prefer novel writing? Or?
They're both interesting. I wouldn't go back to the screenwriting unless it was, like, paid up front somehow. And, you know, the idea of writing a screenplay on spec, hoping that it gets made, I'll never do again. It's too much time investment for something that's not even a finished product.
Right.
Wow. You going to write more books?
I am. I'm working on a follow-up, actually, which I did not intend. It's not a sequel, necessarily. As I finished Painless and put it out there, again, it gets to that, you know, this project's done, what do I do next? So I had a couple ideas I was kicking around, none were quite coming together, and I said, okay, why don't I go through, I think I had one other screenplay that I thought could be a solid horror follow-up, and there's this movie called Teeth that I had written, and it was a creature film, kind of just this purposely schlocky B-movie creature film about a girl that moves to L.A. and ends up in a building with, like, a cult that worships these creatures and stuff.
Those are always fun.
So I flipped through it to see what was still in there. And, excuse me, it turns out that this cult is chanting about how they want to welcome the pain and all this, and I completely forgot about it. I had written this about 5 years before Painless. And I so there's all these parallels to weird pain things, and there's a lot of thematic overlaps. So, but it might be this like pain series of some kind, but it's not really a sequel. But it's definitely a thematic follow-up.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome.
Nice.
Fascinating.
That's cool. I like that. I like that.
Something,
so the book
something
is
you said
painless.
That the very. Oh. I want to. Do we have
Sorry.
Time for another
this
question?
Is, this is
our,
yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
a,
oh,
we
no,
can't
no,
hear
yeah,
each
we're
other
fine.
Very
we're
well.
Fine.
At the
yeah,
very
no, we're
beginning,
fine.
When I was having. When I, yeah, when I was having dog problems, I just barely heard you say something about in the early 2000s when horror was all, you know, Saw and all torture porn, basically. Alistair and I were just talking about that again because we feel the same way. It was the Bush era, we were going to war, 9/11, all that. And our theory is that that became popular because of the way of the world at the time. It calmed down. You know, the Obama era, we got some good ghost stories and things instead. And what do you think about that? Do you think that was the state of the world was part of the reason we had so much torture, you know?
I don't know.
It is always
interesting to look at that. Yeah, it's always interesting to look at that parallel. I haven't really sat down to think about why that was. You know, sometimes the easiest explanation is that Hollywood likes things that make money, and if one came out and make money, they're going to keep doing that over and over again, and then finally someone makes a ghost movie, and then they do ghost movie. So sometimes it's as simple as that. I don't know.
That's true.
But it is interesting to see why certain things are popular at certain times and why certain films or books cross over to the audience and others don't.
Yeah, it is. I think it's interesting. Yeah. Alistair, I cut you off.
I was just going to say what I was going to ask is just that I just want to remind everybody the book is Painless. It's available now. It's got all kinds of stuff going for it. And I'm curious, Marty, what you think is, I guess, what about this book are you the most proud of?
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess just it's nothing specific, just that it came together and seems to be getting a good response. You know, I started out with my end goal really just being if I just had a couple hard copies of this book and it had some of my brother's story in there that I could share with family and friends and stuff, that was enough for me to get through it. So the fact that people are responding to it pretty well is pretty cool to see. I don't know that there's anything specific to be, you know, quote unquote proud of.
Nice.
I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we let you go, can you tell the listeners where they can find more about you and where they can find Painless and maybe, you know, all things Marty Thornley, where do they go?
The easiest way, just search my name. I don't have, like, usernames or anything. It's all just my name, Marty, M-A-R-T-Y, Thornley, T-H-O-R-N-L-E-Y, and that'll find me on Facebook, Twitter. The book's on Amazon. It's on Kindle. And I'm trying to get it in stores. I just got it back on Ingram, which is a system that lets you get it back in stores, so I'm working on that. Right now I would go to Amazon to find the book, and MartyThornley.com is the central place.
All right. Has been a pleasure having you. We're looking forward to reading it as soon as we're through our deadlines, and congratulations on your first book. That's awesome.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you both.
All right. All right, until next week, everybody, this is Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. We wish you a haunted night.
And sweet screaming.
Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.